Welcome to Face to Face. Face to Face is an in-depth look at the life and career of a popular sports figure from a Christian perspective. Now, here's your host of Face to Face, Tom Rust.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome to Face to Face. We're glad to have you with us today, and hope that you're having a nice fall day. I'm not sure exactly what sports you're involved in today, of course, but hope it's maybe golf, or maybe you're taking a look at the NFL. But I'll tell you what, being a baseball guy that I am, I'm still really tied into the World Series between the Washington Nationals and the Houston Astros. Got a link to the World Series and the fact that one of the umpires is a longtime friend, Lance Barksdale, and he's on Face to Face today. Now, if you listen to the show very often, you know that I'm involved with an umpire ministry called Calling for Christ, which was started by Teddy Barrett, and Ted Barrett's done some World Series. But Lance Barksdale, Mississippi native, is getting the chance this year to do his first World Series. And when I heard about it, I actually texted Lance, and he texted right back, and we talked for a little while right before the game. And we did this interview a few years ago. Actually, it was in New York City. I had an opportunity to go to Yankee Stadium, the old Yankee Stadium, right before it was renovated. And before I went to Yankee Stadium, I had a chance to go to a New York City hotel and sit down in a hotel room with Lance Barksdale, and that's the interview that you're going to hear today. Lance Barksdale, 52 years old, comes out of Mississippi. Described as a compliant umpire who wants to get along, but he says he's probably thrown out Bobby Cox of the Atlanta Braves, the old Atlanta Braves coach, probably thrown him out more than any other coach in Major League Baseball. And he's described as a steady guy with a good strike zone, tolerant of coaches, but he's not going to let any coach overrun him. So we'll see what happens. Lance will get, by the way, he will get Game 5. As we're broadcasting this, that hasn't happened yet. But Lance will get Game 5 behind the plate. Other than that, he's one of six umpires who will be rotating during this whole World Series between the Houston Astros and the Washington Nationals. So we had a great time. Lance is an outstanding Christian. Thought you'd want to hear this interview, and that's why we're bringing it back from a few years ago. Lance Barksdale, Major League umpire. We'll take a break, and when we come back, you'll hear the interview. So don't go away. You are listening to Face to Face. Thank you very much, and welcome back once again to Face to Face. We're glad to have you with us today, and today we're talking baseball again, and as we've done in the past a couple of times, we're talking to a Major League umpire, Lance Barksdale, who is making a name for himself in the majors. And Lance, first of all, thanks for being a part of Face to Face. What made you decide you wanted to be an umpire?
Well, when I was younger, I always loved baseball. I mean, even when I was a kid, I'd always played. And then I actually got a college scholarship from a Division II school back home, Mississippi College. I'd hurt my arm my first year, and I'd gotten some tests on it, and they thought it was just some strained ligaments, and it ended up being a rotator cuff problem. So I started umpiring, and I knew that I would never, you know, make it to the big leagues as a player. I didn't want my arm cut on. I know the surgeries and stuff have changed a lot nowadays versus it was when I was a in college. But I'd started umpiring and made some money doing it, and an old coach of mine actually told me about the umpire schools and went to umpire school.
What kind of umpire school did you go to?
I went to Harry Wendelstedt's in Daytona Beach. At the time, there was three schools when I went, and his was the only one that was on the beach, and I love the beach, so that's the reason I picked his school. So.
Good pick, no doubt about that. Now, you started out, went through the steps. There's like a ladder that you have to go through. You start out in low A and move yourself up. You started out in the Appalachian League in 1993. And when you did that, did you think that you would get to the majors?
Actually, it was 92. You know, I knew they told us when we went to umpire school that less than 2% ever make it to the big leagues. And at the time, you know, I had gotten a college degree. I had a business degree from Mississippi College. And I said, I'm going to give it a shot and just see what happens. You know, I'd been around the game my whole life, and like I said, I was just going to see what happens.
I'll tell you what, when I hear umpires talk about the conditions they have to go through in the lower minors, everybody's got a story. Do you have a story about what some conditions were, places that you have to get ready for the game down there?
Probably one of the ones that stick out to me is Martinsville. In Martinsville, Virginia, I think it's where, I think, yes, Virginia, I know it's Barnesville. You actually got dressed. They had no place for you to dress, and you got dressed at the hotel. I mean, you went with full gear, chest protector, shin guards, and you parked on the outfield fence, and they had a gate for you to come through. And that's, I mean, there was, the stadiums that had, you know, very small dressing rooms, but that is one that had no dressing room at all that just kind of sticks out to me because it was different.
Tell me this now. We know what the facilities are like, or I know what the facilities are like, the Major League locker rooms. I've been in a few of those. What are the facilities like for the umpires in the Major Leagues?
It's very, very comfortable. Some of the older stadiums are not as good, even though I like working in older stadiums, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cubs, because it's, you know, being a fan growing up, that's the places you wanted to be. But the newer stadiums actually have really good locker rooms. And some of the old ones, Boston has actually done a new locker room for us over the last couple of years, and it's expanded. Chicago's probably one of the worst, but most of the new ballparks are all very nice.
Now, some of the Major League locker rooms for players have kitchens, they have couches, they have TVs, they have, even a few of them have pool tables, things like that. Do you have any of those amenities in your locker room?
No, we don't have any of those amenities. That's why they make a lot more money than we do. So.
What does it take to get to the majors? You said only 2% of the umpires get there, and now that you're there and you look back, what are some of the things that that you would tell somebody if they wanted to get to the majors?
I think some guys, it's easy when you're in the minor leagues coming up. You know, sometimes you don't see supervisors. You're not making any money. You're away from your family, and it gets real hard. I just think that every single day you can't. If you take one day off, you know, somebody sneaks in, it's so hard to get there as it is. If you take one day off, as far as not hustling, I mean, everybody's going to miss calls. You're going to have days you don't feel like being out there, and I understand that. But if you take a day off and a supervisor sneaks in on you and say you have 8 to 9, 10 years in, and now this is your one shot, now you've wasted 9, 10 years of your life. So I just say don't take a day off.
So you have to do the best that you can, and it's like every time you come to the park, you can't come to the park and take a look around and say, you know, I'm doing pretty well and I'm going to get there. You have to really work hard. A lot of times, you know, when you watch a game, you see the home plate umpire working hard, of course, but you see the other three guys and they look like they're not doing much. But I'm sure that's really not true, because I'm sure every time you come to the park, wherever you're at, if you're on the bases, you've got things you got to be looking at. What are some of those things?
Right, you got special coverages, rotations where a guy first, you know, if the guy first goes out with a runner on first, a plate guy has to come up, the third base guy has to come across the middle of the infield. You got fly ball responsibilities. Every ball that's hit, each guy has got somewhere to go, whether he takes the ball or he takes the runner. And like I said, in the minor leagues, it's easy, you know, when you got a routine fly ball to not hustle, but it gets noticed. If you know, like I said, you got a supervisor there, and he's looking at you, giving you a chance, and he sees you not hustle one time, he just thinks that you're lazy. Now, it might be that your back was hurting that day or whatever, but most of the time they don't even let you know they're there. They'll sneak in on you.
Is it harder actually to be behind the plate once every 4 days, or is every position really pretty much about the same?
I personally, and I think you'll find this for majority guys, if it's a big, I would rather work the plate. You're in the game every pitch. You just can't do it every day, and that's why, you know, it gives you not only mental but physically also to work the plate only every fourth day. But on the bases, a lot of times you may go the whole game without having a call, you know, per se anything. I say a call, but anything close. And then you have something in the eighth and ninth inning where you're not mentally in it, or, you know, maybe your mind drifted or something, and, you know, you could cost a team a game or miss something just not being in it mentally. So I'd much rather, you know, work the plate, but you just can't do it every day.
You do this, of course, every day. You get a few days off during the season, but there's got to be maybe a game or two in your career already that stands out. Any particular experience or any particular game on the field that you can remember?
Two games stick out. I actually had to plate when Randy Johnson tied the Major League strikeout record with 20 strikeouts when he was with the Diamondbacks. And then the other one was when Ted Barrett, my partner now, was on the field with me also when Sammy Sosa had the court bat incident. And I'm actually the guy that took the court bat off the field and had to go hide it. And I told the story earlier in the year to somebody else that the year before, Albert Bell, or maybe a couple years before, Albert Bell had a court bat, and they confiscated the bat, and somebody broke in the umpire locker room and stole it during the game. So in Chicago, I was the one that took the bat, so I didn't want anybody, I didn't want it coming back on me if somebody broke in our room. So I actually hid the bat on some water pipes in the stadium of Chicago. And then a couple innings later, baseball security came and got me, and I had to go get the bat for them so they could send it to the commissioner's office.
That's an incredible story. being a part of history like that, and as umpires, I know you're always going to get to be a part of that. Do you get to know the managers and the players pretty well when you walk out there? Of course, the managers you see all the time because every time there's a game and there's lineups exchanged at home plate. But do you get to a place to where they know you and know everything about you, and you know pretty much everything about them?
I know more probably of the players because a lot of the players you come up with in the minor leagues. The managers, you know, they'll come up to the plate meeting, maybe the first series of the year. And other than that, they send their coaches or bench coaches or somebody else to bring up the lineup cards. So it's a lot of managers I don't know that well. But there's a lot more players that you do know because you're with them. They'll speak to you. You know, if you're working the bases and you got a timeout or something, they'll, you know, speak to you about something. You may talk about family or, you know, something that happened the night before or whatever. But as far as managers, I don't really know that well.
Lance Barksdale, Major League Umpire, is our guest. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about him and find out a little bit more about his faith. So don't go away. You're listening to Face to Face. Welcome back to Face to Face. Our guest is Lance Barksdale, who does Major League. He's a Major League umpire, so he is right in the thick of all the things that are happening in Major League Baseball. And Lance, I think it was July 2006 you were named to the Major League staff. Do you remember? I'm sure you do. You remember your first game?
First game as a full-time guy or first game, period?
First game as either one. First game as a full-time guy, the first time you're introduced to the majors, I guess that would probably be something that would stick out in your mind more than first time being named to the Major League staff.
Yeah, my first game was with the Dodgers and the Mets, and my first plate job was in May. Well, my first game was May 26th, and then my first plate job was 2 days later, and I actually had the ESPN game of the week, and I had Mike Hampton and Kevin Brown. I remember that, you know, very, very good. It was kind of nice, you know, you go into your first game and, you know, a lot of guys don't know you or whatever, but I happened to have both of those teams, the Mets and the Dodgers, all during spring training. So, you know, they didn't know I wasn't full-time. So it kind of made it a little bit nicer that evening. So
I know that as a player, I've talked to a lot of players, and they go in and they, first time they play in places like Fenway Park or Wrigley Field or Yankee Stadium, they have some awe, and then they have to get over that real quick. I would imagine it's the same, I would assume it's the same with umpires, but I would assume also that there's places when you walk in that you still really enjoy, just kind of the atmosphere. What are some of the parks you really enjoy playing in?
I enjoy the older stadiums, the Wrigley Fields, the Fenway Parks, the Yankee Stadiums, because they're always full, packed to capacity. The fans there are diehard, whatever, whether it be Cubs or, like I said, Red Sox or Yankees. When you work the plate, you can't really take everything in. When you work the bases, especially like second base before the game starts, you go out and you're able to just, you know, kind of look around, and it is, I don't know, it's kind of an awe feeling, but growing up and being a fan also, it is nice to step on those fields and do something you enjoy doing.
You're from Jackson, Mississippi, and you talked about growing up a little bit. Tell us what your life was like growing up.
I was born in Brookhaven, Mississippi, and I lived in Macomb. My daddy was in the military, and I lived in Macomb, Mississippi for about 12 years. And my little sister, when she was born deaf. And one of the best schools in the South for that is Magnolia Speech School in Clinton, Mississippi. And my dad, we moved to Jackson to be able to put her into Magnolia Speech School. And we always said that, you know, when we got older, we'd go back to Macomb, Mississippi, which it's not a whole lot in Macomb. It's a good little town, but it's just not as much to offer. I ended up going to Jackson and went to Forest Hill High School. I played basketball and baseball in high school. And, it's a lot bigger city with a lot more stuff to offer. Go ahead.
I was going to say that Jesus Christ became a part of your life somewhere along the line. Tell us a little bit about when Christ came into your life.
I was actually in Macomb at South Macomb Baptist Church when I was 10 years old. We had a youth group there, and actually my whole youth group, we had, vacation Bible school type thing is when it happened for me when I was 10 years old in Macomb. And, you know, you get with the military, and when you move, it's, you know, it was harder when I moved to Jackson because you didn't know people, and we bounced around to different churches trying to find people. You know, when you're young, you have friends just like ball and everything else. You try to find a place where you fit in, and it took a little time in Jackson for that to happen.
Umpires, I would imagine, are a group that maybe spirituality can be kind of tough. I know that being on the road constantly, you're with the same guys all the time, and I know that you don't have the camaraderie in the larger group like you do with players, because players have 23, 24, 25 guys and coaches. But tell me a little bit about what it's like as far as being a Major League umpire and being a Christian.
You know, coming up through the minor leagues, I think it's harder on guys. I mean, myself, that's just the way I was brought up. I kind of tried to be my own man anyway. But I think for a lot of guys coming up through the minor leagues, it is so hard for you to make it to the big leagues as a full-time guy. Guys try to fit in. And I think sometimes guys steer away from what they really want to do just to try to fit in, not to try to, you know, say, use the word brown nose or anything, but they just don't want anybody to necessarily talk bad about them because they're not doing something that the rest of the crew's doing. Once you get to the big leagues, I think it's a lot easier on anybody to kind of be your own person because you've made it, and you know, it really doesn't matter whether your faith or what you do or whatever. It really doesn't matter what people say.
How do you stay spiritually up on the road?
I read my Bible every day. I went through a period of time. I know that's not the question you asked, but I went through a period of time when I was the 94, 95, when I was getting a lot of games in the big leagues. And, you know, everything was going good. Man upstairs was taking care of me. But I don't know if I put it on me getting a job myself, I put it on supervisors or whatever, and you know, other guys were getting a job or whatever. And then the year before, or 2 years before I got my job, for some reason I didn't get games the first part of the year. I was told that you know, just don't be surprised when other guys start up ahead of you, and that was real hard when you were the guy that had the most games the year before, and now you wasn't getting any games, and 12 or 13 guys were going up ahead of you. And and I thought about quitting, and I told my wife was actually a nurse, and she started going back to nurse practitioner school because she thought I was coming home. But I said I wanted to make it through the season, and I put it in God's hands. I said I've had a good run at this. I've got, you know, at this time I had 600, 700 games in, and I said, if this is what you want me to do, I'm going to give 100% still, and I'm going to make it through this season. And I put it all in his hands. And for 2 months, I did not go up, not one game. Every person that was in the minor league went up ahead of me. But after those 2 months, I started going back up, and I stayed up pretty much the rest of the year.
Let's get to a place now to where you're at, to where you're going to stay up. I know baseball players, of course, get to a place to where their skills run out and they end up and they can't play anymore. But is it now pretty much that you've established yourself and you're going to be there pretty much no matter what?
Well, I'm still under what the probationary period where they can fire me for 3 years. The other guys joke. They said, I don't think anybody's ever been fired for it. But for 3 years, you're under probationary period. And I want to be a guy that, you know, I got a job. There's still some young guys that are good friends of mine that are you know, got 1,000 games or more than 1,000 games right now. We're waiting on those guys to get jobs. And I was fortunate enough to get a job over them. I just don't want anybody to ever say that I did not deserve the job I got. So, you know, even after my probationary period up will be July 6th of next year, I will still, you know, work harder than ever because I want to, you know, I always want to prove people that they made the right decision.
Is it a goal of an umpire to be in the World Series and to be in the All-Star game?
I think it is. I think if you don't want that, you're in the wrong profession. I mean, it's just, you know, you get a nice paycheck, and then you, you know, as you put in your service time, the more years, you know, the guys make. But if ultimately my goal is to work a World Series, I mean, that's, you know, the All-Star game is nice, and that's something that you know, you'll get over time. But the World Series is the ultimate. I just think if you don't want to work that, I just really don't think that, you know, that you love is there for it. I mean, you just pretty much draw a paycheck if you don't want to work a World Series.
Jesus Christ, as you said, is a central part of your life and not just something that you have in the background. But even when you're on the field, I know a lot of players pray when they're on the field, but is it something that's with you out there no matter what? Are there times when you have to call upon the Lord and say, God, you got to help me get through this situation?
Oh, yes. It's all the time. I start my game off every day, and I pray for everybody on that field. I pray for my crew, and I pray to do the best of our ability, and I pray to not miss a call, but if I miss something, to give me the will to be able to handle that. And I want every one of those players to do the best of their ability, but I know people are going to make outs, and I know I'm going to make mistakes. But I know, I've learned no matter what happens, no matter how bad it is, I know that he's there with me. And, yes, that's constant. You have situations in games or whatever, and you have calls or whatever, and you're just asking to be with you, help you handle situations and that type of stuff.
I know there was a situation a couple of years ago, and I thought you showed incredible integrity, a game against the Phillies, I believe, and you and Charlie Manuel got into it a little bit, but you came back and I think apologized after that, and that really showed a lot about your integrity.
Well, we'd had the play actually would have ended the game. It was a play at first base. I think the bases were loaded. And I had a play at first on the back end of a double play, which, you go on sound. And Charlie came out. It was, would have ended the game. And argued a little bit. Ended up getting ejected. And then he said, I bet you that you missed it or whatever. So, first, you always watch plays on replays. If you want to know if you were in position or if you missed it or whatever. And, the first four or five times I saw this play, I still thought I got it right because it was that close. Well, they show it from another camera angle because they always got the extra camera angles. And I missed it. It was very, very close, but I did miss it. It would have ended the game. But the bad part, not only you missed the call, but now the game went extra innings. So now you're out there. You don't know if you missed it, and your rest of your crew are having to go extra innings because you missed a call. So, the Phillies are mad at you anyway, and your crew's probably mad at you. But the next day, Charlie, some players, most of them don't. I'm not speaking of, but some players, some managers, they hold stuff over. You miss a call or you make a mistake, they hold it over. But like I said, a majority of them don't because they make mistakes too. But the next day, Charlie came out to make a pitching change, and I made the comment to Charlie. I said, I know some guys think we don't care, but I said, it does bother us when we miss calls. And Charlie told me, he said, I missed one time too. So it's, kind of broke the ice. So.
Lance, we have had a great time together today. I certainly appreciate your friendship. You and I work together on something called blueforkids.com. We've only got a few seconds here, but tell us a little bit about that.
Blue for Kids is a charity that actually I think Marvin Hudson is the original, the one that started it. And it's a charity that we go out and help underprivileged kids that are waiting for adoption. And it was the first experience I had actually gone on. Ted Barrett is actually one of the members of it also, but it was the first one I went, and I told the people that day that I did a couple interviews. I knew going into it that I was going to get more out of it than the kids did, and I've got two healthy children, and to see other children suffering and knowing what their parents go through, it is just amazing how it'll make your heart feel.
Lance, let's wrap it up this way. I know you have a favorite verse. Tell us what your favorite verse is.
It's no doubt from when I was a kid. It's John 3:16. It's, if you don't understand anything else in the Bible, God sent his son to die for us. And no matter what you do, if you believe in him, everybody sins, everybody makes mistakes. But if you believe in him and put your faith in him, it's just amazing what he can do for you.
Can't say it any better. Lance Barksdale, our guest, thanks for being with us. Good luck on the field.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Lance Barksdale, Major League Umpire. We'll take a break and be back, so don't go away. You're listening to Face to Face.
Welcome back to our time. Lance Barksdale, umpire, was really a great guy. Not a very big guy, but he's been around. He's been on the field for some very memorable times. He was at first base for Greg Maddux's 300th win. And he was at first base when Johan Santana pitched a no-hitter. I believe that was with the Minnesota Twins. And he was behind the plate for Randy Johnson's 20 strikeout game in 2001, and he was the first umpire to have his home run call overturned by instant replay. First umpire to do that. So he's been around since 2000 as an umpire, and did some fill-in games. That's where you do minor league and major league the same year. And in 2006, he was brought up and became the full-time major league umpire. And what a great guy, Lance Barksdale. Hope to see him in spring training when I get out there and have a chance to talk to him about this experience. Well, we hope that you enjoy face-to-face, and you can take a look at our face-to-face website at face-to-faceradio.com. We've still got up there for a few more days. We'll still have up there our Christian All-Star team because we're still watching baseball, and we've got some players that are on there. And take a look at those guys. Pray for those guys. Pray for the umpires. I think that's very, very important. Pray for everybody that's involved, and particularly it's going to be interesting to see if the Washington Nationals. Now, it may have happened by the time, because we were a few days out when we put this show together. But it'll be interesting to see if the Washington Nationals can win the World Series. That would be something. They have not had, up until this year, they have not had a World Series game in Washington, D.C. since 1933. Isn't that interesting? The Washington Nationals, who were the Montreal Expos for a long time, and, of course, Washington had two failed teams. They had the Washington Senators, which went on to become the Minnesota Twins, and then they had another team in Washington, which went on to become the Texas Rangers. And finally, this team looks like they're going to stick in that beautiful Nationals stadium. Well, I want to close with this verse from the book of 1 Peter. 1 Peter 5:6 says this, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time." That's about it for us. We look forward to having you back next week. We'll have another Christian athlete. Till then, this is Tom Russ saying, remember this, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, be a good sport. Bye.
You've been listening to Face to Face with Tom Rust. For a free copy of today's program or for more information, please write to Face Ministries, P.O. Box 125, Columbus, Indiana 47202. You can also find us on the web at facetofaceradio.com. Join us again next week as Tom Rust goes face to face.